This episode of iRescue Radio is brought to you by ProCPR.org. Online CPR training, when you want it, where you want it.
And welcome to iRescueRadio.com. My name is Roy Shaw, and I'm here with two of our guest panelists, Jody Marvin and Dan Hendrick. And this show is going to be specifically designed to talk about everything from general health and well-being to epidemics that are coming up in society to rescue situations and injuries and accidents that happen all around the world. And from time to time, we'll be bringing in guests and special experts in regards to this. And today we've got a full lineup of a lot of different things. And let's jump right into the show. Guys, the first thing is that there's been the rarity of an insect bite that we just don't see in Michigan. Did you hear about this?
I did. That's the black widow spider bite. And actually, in the state of Michigan, in Belding, actually, a small town, a teenager got bit by a black widow. It's unusual.
Now, in Michigan, Dan, we don't have black widows.
That's why I'm in Michigan.
Right. We don't have rattlesnakes.
Right.
We don't have black widows.
Right.
We don't really have too many brown recluse. In Michigan, we don't have a lot of tropical deadly animals.
Land or on sea?
No.
It's kind of a nice thing.
Yeah.
But this kid, though, he got it from, I heard, the dishwasher box. It was actually made by Maytag in Mexico. It sat in the house for 2 weeks.
Little bonus.
Yeah. Well, you know.
In bad economic times, they want to throw a little stimulus into their own dishwasher.
They did it.
Yeah. Black widows included.
Yeah, nice gift. It only caused him to be in the hospital for, about a week or so with severe nerve damage and close to death. But other than that, it was a good gift.
Yeah, a black widow. I mean, what's some of the stuff that can happen from a black widow bite? I mean, can't it just leave like a sore on the arm?
Oh,
it's
no.
It's got to be venomous, isn't it?
Oh, definitely venomous. This is the southern black widow, and that's why. And like I said, it caused nerve damage to this kid. He had to take quite a bit of medicine for it. I believe he's still taking medicine several months later.
So what's his condition now?
I believe he's fully recovered at this time.
But he was having a hard time.
Oh, absolutely. He was in bad shape.
It could have killed him.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And if he'd had an allergy to this, right, he probably would have had anaphylactic reaction, which
right.
is a severe allergic reaction, right along with all the other problems.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness.
Our local hospital, actually, there was only one hospital in the entire Grand Rapids region, and they had one dose of venom for this black widow spider.
It didn't matter that the date was like 1992 or anything.
No, well, no. May have been a little out of date, but hey.
Oh, I got good news and bad news. Good news is we have one last dose of venom, anti-venom. Bad news? It's like got mold in it.
Yeah.
Scraped it off, applied, all well.
It gets better with age.
Right, like moldy cheese. Anyways, good news is that he got better. Now, I think what we should probably say is no opening gifts from other areas in the house.
Yeah. Right.
Rule of thumb, shake the box.
Shake
the
outside.
Empty shoes before putting on and shake the box.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, anyways, beware of boxes that say black widows included.
Manufactured in Mexico.
Yeah. Now, interestingly enough, there was, while we're on this whole theme here, that's not the only bite that happened recently. We had this guy who's an outdoor enthusiast out, and I believe it's pronounced Canberra, Australia. So he's out there in the bush, right? And he's walking, getting ready to go on a two-day walk. And this article says, you know, this 27-year-old was only hours into a two-day solo trek when the snake struck him without warning. I mean, what did he do? You know, struck. Yeah. Have you ever seen the fists on a snake?
No.
Yeah, knock your head off.
I think it says a snake, it would strike when it was handled or felt threatened.
Yeah, but you do too.
I do. You know, but my venomous, I'm only 50% venomous though, just like the snake.
I've seen your venom.
Well, yeah.
You don't want to handle him.
No, don't handle me.
Or aggravate him.
I'm sure it's got coffee bean in it.
Yeah.
It's nasty.
Yeah.
His venom is nasty. Anyways, so is this brown snake.
Oh, boy. Hold on. Not a brown snake.
Well, I said, what the heck? You know, what the heck's wrong with a brown snake? There's lots of brown snakes. So we looked it up. It was the genus Pseudonaja. Now, if I pronounce that wrong and there's any of you hippie snake handlers out there, just get on our website at irescueradio.com and give us some feedback so that we can get this straight. But anyways, this was the deadly Australian brown snake. Strikes him, and the guy says, well, I put me bag down and went to sit down and move to position myself. That's a poor Australian accent. And felt the snake hit me on the leg. After being bitten on his left leg, he was able to identify the reptile as a type of brown snake as it slithered off. I was very disappointed because I didn't get to eat my Mars bar.
Well, there you go. What's more important?
I'm going down. I'm taking it with me.
I say, it wasn't the car accident head on. It was the fact that I spilled my Starbucks on the way in.
That's right.
Ticked me right off. Sure, the guy's life is at stake.
Well, so how's he doing?
Well, he says he was joking about that. But anyways, thankfully, he had Altel because his mobile phone reception helped. In the bush of Australia. No, he didn't have Altel. I can't even get reception at my house, and he's got reception out in the wilderness
of
Australia.
Satellite phone.
Thankfully, I was able to text message my friend and tell him that I was dying.
Ooh, that's a good message, isn't it? Thanks.
Yeah. Well, anyways, he says he waited about 20 minutes for paramedics to arrive. He said he started to feel the effects of the bite. I was more just feeling very ill in the stomach. Quite lightheaded and nauseated. I think only 90% of that was panic,
Mr. Lane. Did he have any medicine with him?
No, but he had GPS.
Well, that should work.
He's heading out. Now, I think I heard that Australia's like the most venomous place on the planet.
Yeah.
And he takes nothing with him for a two-day trek by himself into the bush.
Well, he says he had GPS, and thankfully the paramedics were able to get there within 20 minutes. And he said that he was in the hospital a few hours after the incident, and he said he was feeling tired but relieved. The paramedics do a remarkable job, he said. They're extremely unrecognized. Well, yeah.
No.
I should read this article more often.
Make you feel good. Warm and fuzzy inside, just like a snake bite.
Right.
The unsung heroes.
Numb.
Numb.
Neurologically numb. Their professionalism is outstanding. Well, I say. They did a great job, he said. Anyways, he obviously got the venom cure and was back on his feet. The GPS was what got the paramedics to him quickly. So I guess to answer your question, Dan, if you don't take any anti-venom snake bite serum
with you,
bring a GPS.
Think TomTom.
Think.
No. Do we get paid for that?
No. Yeah, yeah. That'll be a
plug for the TomTom.
That'll be a couple grand. Thank you. Yep. So, you know, moral of the story is, wear waders.
Be light on your feet and quicker than the brown snake.
Right.
Or don't handle or agitate a brown snake.
Don't stop.
Don't go to the bush. That's his first mistake. Go to Michigan. There's nothing venomous.
Go to Michigan. Right. Except for unpacking, you know, things like dishwashers.
Yes. Yeah. Well, then it becomes a little
thank
venomous.
Thank you for the global economy.
Yeah. Honey, I've got good news and bad news. Good news, we have a very cheap present for the kids. We made a house out of the box. Bad news, it's infested with black widows.
Don't touch the nest in the corner.
No.
It's the only trip to Mexico we're taking in these economic times.
That's right. That's right. Okay, well, moving right along, we're going to be talking about none other than the
flu epidemic.
What do you know about the flu, Dan?
I've got it.
Nice.
Okay.
Thanks for letting us know, and Mr. Sickie.
Let me cover my mouth up while you continue to talk.
I don't know what it's like around the rest of the world, but flu shots are all the rage. Everywhere you go, every street corner, flu shots are available.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
What? For a particular strain. Wait,
street corners? Where are you getting your flu shots?
On a street corner.
Is that what they told you, Dan?
I took a flu shot. The bloodborne pathogens module. I'm fine.
Hey, did you feel warm and fuzzy inside like a snake bite too?
A little sick in the stomach.
All right,
I'm getcha. Got you sick in the stomach. Well, anyways, we've had some flu starting up here, and you're right. We're going to talk a little bit about the flu shot, and in particular, let's add a little technology to the whole mix here. You know, CNN.com came out with a story on how Google has a new tool to detect flu outbreaks. And we might be able to talk to a nurse a little bit later on, but regardless of that, to give us a little insight on the effectiveness or the accuracy of widgets and gadgets like this that people might rely on to know when the flu bug is traveling in. But after talking to a nurse who's in community health this morning, she said, you know, one of my biggest concerns is that being confirmed by laboratory testing? So she said, you know, watch the watch how you see the flu moving through on these kinds of things, because it's really just popular search terms.
Well, right? I got to believe it's emotional search.
Yeah.
You've got a mom who's got a child that's sick.
Yep.
They're Googling it. They're looking for a particular strain or whatever. Google's collecting the data and presuming certain things.
Yeah. It's not actual sickness. It's just people who are looking on Google and searching for flu.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, to down Google and say, well, this isn't one of those technologies that's going to help anybody. Yes, it is, but you got to put it in context.
Yeah.
Know that what's happening is it's popular at this time for people to be searching for the flu, so it might be moving in their direction.
Yep.
Other than that, though, you're probably going to find a lot of helpful links to talk about signs and symptoms. And what we want to do is talk a little bit about that right now. Now, there's a lot of people that may or may not understand what it is, the difference between viruses, flu versus a cold, pneumonia that's bacterial versus maybe a bronchitis that's secondary to flu. So what do you think about that?
Well, the different viruses, obviously, when we say flu, people think I'm coughing, I'm sneezing, I'm hacking up something. Well, there's also the flu, like what happened at Hope College, we'll talk about in just a moment, the type of flu that is diarrhea and vomiting that lasts for 24 to 48 hours. There's all different types of varieties of flus.
Hence my theme music, I like to move it. Because let me tell you, that's one of the symptoms, right?
Well, I believe some of those college students were really moving it.
Yeah, what was that one comment from that one guy?
The one kid, he said the hallways were just covered. And, you know, too much information. Yeah, mean,
get that mental picture out of your head.
Please, quickly.
So they did the next best thing. Instead of keeping everybody quarantined at the college, even though 420 students of that college came down with the flu, they shut down the college for 5 days and did the best thing they could have ever done.
That's right. They sent them home to their parents to infect them.
Just send them home, get them on the buses, get them into public transportation so we can spread the wealth.
Right. Norovirus is a friend of many. So
it's the gift that keeps on giving.
It gives, trust me. But the good news, it's only 24 to 48 hours.
Can you imagine the surge through the sewers?
I'd rather not imagine that, actually, but I could.
420 people in a college and they're all on the commode.
Oh, boy.
Moving right along.
Moving. That story moved me.
Anyways, about the flu, the signs and symptoms are this. Normally, you got general aches, pains, malaise. You can get a sore throat, but it should have come on gradually. Headache, nausea, vomiting does not have to be present. And in fact, in most of the types of influenza or flu viruses, it's not your normal stomach flu. It's not the diarrhea.
It's a different type of flu, a different strain of flu virus. But the key is virus. It's not a bacteria. So all the people say, well, give me a pill to take this thing, so I can get over this thing. It's not going to fix it because it is a virus. You have to simply use the old-fashioned method of rest.
Rest.
Lots of fluids.
Lots of fluids. And we're not talking about coffee
or Coke.
We're talking about water.
Water.
Water, juices. They don't have to have sugar in them. And a lot of people are going right out and buying electrolyte fluids. And that can be helpful, but that's normally going to be used more when a person has lost so much fluid that we're in an electrolyte imbalance. Right. Some of the symptoms of early onset of electrolyte imbalance can be cramping in the stomach, in the thighs, Charlie horses, headaches, general fatigue, really tired, and sure, go out and get some Gatorade, drink a couple bottles of that, but there's no replacement for good old-fashioned water.
That's right. It's going to pass through your body. It's going to quickly.
What is it?
Remember the commode picture? It's going to pass through your body quickly, and actually that helps to get rid of the virus. It helps your body stay healthy, because if your body's dehydrated, your body can't fight that flu.
Yeah, and we're mostly talking about that Gatorade has sodium and potassium. Yep. And small amounts of potassium. Large amounts of potassium can be really bad if you get too much of that. Yeah. We're not really talking about that. The best thing is stay hydrated. Now, that's easy to say when you're well enough to drink a lot of fluids, but most people don't feel like eating or drinking anything when they've got the bad flu.
Not at all.
And so you need to realize that when a person has really dry mouth, dry skin, has been vomiting or having diarrhea for a long amount of time, it's going to be vital that if they can't get out of bed and they seem to be really lethargic, it might be time to get them into the ER for an IV transfusion of fluids.
Right. It's really, you know, someone who's truly dehydrated, it's going to require a hospital visit to truly get your body back in track. Because that true dehydration, I mean, you could feel dehydration and drink water. Your body's going to make you thirsty. Mm-hmm. Your body's going to tell you when you're dehydrated. Mm-hmm. However, there's a certain state that you do need to get to the hospital and seek medical treatment.
Yeah. Complication of flu and why people die from the flu, in exception, we're not talking about pneumonia here.
No.
We're talking about purely dehydration is that they lose their electrolyte imbalance. They don't get it back in time. And the very young, the very old, or those with immune compromise, those are the people that tend to have a problem with this. And if they don't get in and get it handled, they're going to die from the symptoms. Not necessarily the virus that took them out. It was the significant symptoms and signs of problems that are secondary to that virus. So don't wait to the last minute. 3 to 5 days into a high fever over, I think it's 102, 101, 102, and you sustain that fever for a few days in a row, and you're not urinating on a regular basis, those are signs that your body is shutting down and not getting enough fluids. If that's happening, severe headache, you can't get out of bed without getting dizzy or even possibly almost fainting, don't even drive the person in. Call the ambulance. We can get an IV fluid started on the way to the hospital, and we fast track them right into the ER. Dan, how many times have you been in an ER for 2.5, 3.5 hours?
A long time.
Yeah.
Many times. It's almost an automatic.
You don't want to have sick people sitting in a waiting room. So call the ambulance when it gets to that point. Otherwise, you can go back out to Google or the web and get some good information about that. Colds are a little bit different. Those are the sniffles and the sneezes, coughs, sore throat, that kind of thing. Now, the last thing about the flu is pneumonia. And that's the one that we try to vaccinate for. It's the big hitters. And there's a lot of misnomers. Dan, you brought this up about the flu shot.
Yeah.
They are the biggest rage right now, and they're also a little edgy. Some people swear by them,
right?
And other people,
like myself,
swear I prefer at it.
Yeah, well, I don't swear too much, but I don't prefer to get one yet. Yeah.
Well, and what I've heard is that it's towards a particular strain of the flu, what they presume will be the big hitter of the year, and they obviously pre-manufacture this stuff going into the season. How much guesswork's involved on their part? And that's one of the reasons I've really not subscribed to it.
Yeah, I got one this year. Yeah, I went and got one.
Yep. Yeah. My doctor wants me to get one, but I've seen more people sick that have gotten the flu shot than those who haven't. Now, of course, that's anecdotal. That's not scientific by any means. But, hey, it's where I'm at.
Well, and I see the other side of it. You know, I try to express to my patients, there's a lot of misnomers out there about getting the flu from the flu shot, and that's impossible. It's almost always an inactive strain unless you take the one up in the nostrils, which is still a strain that can cause the flu. The inactive strain cannot cause flu. Now, that doesn't mean that the person isn't already exposed before they get the shot. See?
Correct.
So you might have somebody that goes in to get the shot, but they've already been exposed to it, and they're just a few days in the incubation period. Now they get the shot, and so, of course, who's going to blame the shot? They are.
Everybody.
Yeah. So it's, again, it's usually for the very old, the very young, or the immune compromised, and it is not going to protect you from every strain of flu for the season. Yep. It's just to hit the ones that are causing deaths in other areas of the world because of complications like pneumonia.
Now, will flu lead to meningitis, or is there a relationship there?
Well, I'm not completely up on viral meningitis, but, you know, one of the things that causes meningitis is a bacteria or a virus that gets into the cerebral spinal fluid, or into the meninges of the central nervous system.
Right.
Hence the headache, hence the spinal cord stiffness, the stiff neck. Some of the signs and symptoms of meningitis that people should be aware of is a severe headache that came from maybe a sore throat or a flu or a cold, symptoms that led up to it, and they are immobilized. We're not talking about I got a little bit of an ache and pain and a stiff neck. We're talking about kids and people that are on their back, they don't feel good at all, and if you ask them to touch their chin to their chest, ooh, they usually can't.
Yep. And one thing there, the big difference is you asked, does the flu lead into meningitis? Well, no and yes. The idea is that the flu does not cause meningitis. You have to be exposed to that meningitis virus or bacteria. However, if you've had the flu recently, your body's immune system is so weak at that point that you're much more susceptible.
Yeah.
You can't fight it off like you would if you didn't have
it.
Now,
keep in mind, there's two different types of meningitis.
Yeah.
And kids, little children, are getting vaccinated for the bacterial meningitis. Bacterial meningitis is a fast-spreading bacterial infection that has a very poor prognosis a lot of the times. People die from bacterial meningitis. They get septic, brain swelling, and it causes death in a lot of cases. Viral meningitis makes you want to die, but tends not to kill you.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, and the only treatment is treat the symptoms and get in for pain management.
Yep.
When it's bacterial infection, early recognition, get the kid in. If they've got a sore neck, if they're not feeling well and you don't know what
headaches
to do, get them in.
Right. They need medication.
Yep. You know, you will not regret a false alarm on those cases. Better to be safe than sorry. Well, let's change gears. Let's talk about ambulances getting sirens you can feel. Jody, what do you know about that?
Well, I tell you, I know that I can feel a siren when I'm in the ambulance.
Well, you and I were talking this morning over coffee. Now, we've been on the ambulance for a lot of years, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Over 16.
All right. So, specifically, a lot of police officers are beginning to use the rumbler. This is a low frequency, like a subwoofer type, right? Have you heard about it, Dan?
I have not, but I have heard the subwoofers in my neighborhood.
This article that we read out of Oklahoma, that Oklahoma ambulances debut sirens that you can feel. They were talking about how people inside the vehicles, they see liquids quiver. liquids ripple.
That's a scary thought when it comes to ambulance drivers.
And full bladders.
Yeah, not good.
It's not the fluid in their eyes that's rumbling?
No.
Okay.
It's just there was a bad picture that came when I, you know. Anyway.
You know, I think about the ambulance sirens and, you know, driving the ambulance down the road, trying to get to the hospital with a code or a serious case in the back. You know, I've wanted to just kind of ram them a couple times and that would kind of help to move them. But with cell phones today, with these cars that people have the stereos cranked, and I think it's a pretty cool idea.
Well, and you had your Saab. That thing was almost soundproof,
yeah, right.
Dan.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't hear.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's the problem too, is that sirens are loud, but a lot of times private companies with all the Medicaid and Medicare and the cutbacks and things, they have to cut corners and they don't get the air horns and the loud cue sirens that big trucks have.
Right.
And you virtually can't hear until you're right up on the back of them. And we tend to cause accidents sometimes accidentally because of their reaction to not knowing someone was following them in an ambulance.
Right.
And then they look in the rearview mirror and,
they
slam on the brakes.
Yeah, slam on the brakes or they swerve to the right without checking to see if they're clear. Well, now this siren incorporates a sound decibel. And some of us have heard this with like some of the more modern music, right? That's got low bass.
Our neighborhood.
You can hear and feel, right? Yeah, our neighborhood. Well, that's kind of the same concept here. So they're incorporating this type of decibel and this frequency that actually rumbles physically.
Keep deer out of the way?
Yeah.
That would be good, too. They actually say you can feel it over 200 feet away.
Yeah, over 200 feet away.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah, there's a lot of technology, actually. What was the name of that technology that they're using for defense? LRDA? Is it? No, low frequency. It's a specific type of sound device that
that's
channels,
a high frequency.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah, you're right. But anyways, it's amazing what they can do with sound now. And in this case, ambulances and police are using it, and it's being effective. People are hearing it, and they're moving out of the way. So good news for emergency medical services as well as public safety.
Mm-hmm.
Now, speaking about sound and music, We have a pretty neat article here on music to your ears is music for your heart, too.
Oh, that's sweet.
I know.
A little sappy for me.
Is it?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, we've over the years have heard a lot about music therapy.
Right.
And how music can either excite you, it can calm a person.
Right.
It can motivate a person, or it can change a culture. Mm-hmm. In fact, speaking about those sound defenses,
right.
I read in an article that the U.S. military was using Western heavy metal in the Middle East and sending that out at ear-piercing levels to confuse the enemy.
Or oh, they're using it at Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah.
That's very, torture.
It's very torture. Yeah, trust me. I know what you mean. It is definitely torture to have that music cranking at you.
What's wrong with that?
Just ask my neighbors. And well, no.
but no, I. You know, we've got Sister Mary Margaret's going to join us later, and she's going to be talking about music therapy in autism, as well as the hospital environment. So,
well, anyways,
to that topic.
Yeah, Reuters writes this. Says songs.
Writers.
Writers?
Writers?
Writers? Writers. Sorry.
It's writers.
You correct us. Call in. iRescueRadio.com.
I'm right.
Give us your comments. See if Dan the man is right.
I'm right.
He's always right. Even when he's wrong, he's right. Out of Washington, songs that make our hearts soar can make them stronger, too. U.S. researchers reported on Tuesday that they found that when people listened to their favorite music, their blood vessels dilated in much the same way as when laughing or taking blood medications.
Ooh, hey. Music is medication.
Right. I've seen pupils that was, blow before. But
well,
never.
In the 60s, music and medication were used quite a bit.
And the combination was volatile.
Hey, combine.
And they're now our grandparents. Yeah.
Candy's dandy, but anyway.
Okay.
We have a pretty impressive effect, said Dr. Michael Miller, director of preventative cardiology at the University of Maryland Medical Center in Baltimore. Blood vessels' diameter improved, he said in a telephone interview. The vessel opened up pretty significantly. You can see the vessels opening up with other activities such as exercise. A similar effect is seen with drugs such as statins, and ACE inhibitors, or ACE inhibitors.
Yeah.
When blood vessels open more, blood flows more smoothly and is less likely to form the blood clots that cause the heart attacks and strokes.
Huh. Well, that's pretty good, too. That's good news. All these different medications out there that help with cholesterol, the cholesterol drugs, that's what they're talking about there. Those are the things that really help with that. And it's actually a pretty good thing. I've heard some studies just recently on the cholesterol drugs that even people that don't have bad cholesterol, taking them has reduced their risk tremendously.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, on the other flip side is that they were talking about the reason why people stop the statins. What did you hear on the radio show the other day?
Well, the psychology is what they were studying. Kaiser Permanente studied 400 people that had been put on a statin drug for cholesterol, and they were trying to determine why after a year they quit taking them. Mm-hmm. And it's the psychology of our immortality.
Hmm.
I don't want to be on drugs the rest of my life.
Did they say anything about some of the side effects too?
You know, they didn't.
Oh.
Or I didn't pick up on that. Mm-hmm. I shared that article with you. Did you pick up anything with that?
Yeah. In fact, some of them said that after about a year or two of being on certain statin medications, they would get symptoms similar to ALS.
So, which is muscle
cramps. Yeah. That's the one thing I've heard a lot, too. I've read up on some of the different ones, and they say there's absolutely no side effects except possibly the normal, you know, like loose bowel, diarrhea, coughing, sneezing.
Oh, we're back to that again.
Well, yeah.
Wait a minute.
That's a whole other ballgame. But
what if you have signs and symptoms of that anyway?
Well.
Quite frankly, if you're on statins for the rest of your life, don't you need adult diapers? Well, really, I think it's a good parallel.
It could be.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is they say there's no side effects, and most of the doctors say there's none either. But some of the things I've read on them, though, they do cause muscle cramping. They do cause muscle pain after a while. And so, I don't know. It's an interesting thing. Some people have it. Some people don't. I think it's like any medication. There's going to be signs and symptoms no matter what.
Well, if we have anybody who's an expert out there in the area of cardiology and high cholesterol, make sure to go to iRescueRadio.com, come to our comments and feedback section, and be sure to leave your name, and contact information so that we can maybe have an interview with you and you can set the story straight for people that are experts in that area for the rest of the world. Now, one interesting point, though, that the doctor who was being interviewed said is, we're not saying to stop your statins or not to exercise, but to add this to an overall program of heart health, said Miller, who presented his findings to a meeting of the American Heart Association in New Orleans. Huh. Interesting. Yep. So listen to some good music that makes you happy.
Do they recommend a band?
Not the heavy metal.
Okay. Well, depends. If it makes you happy.
Okay.
I probably has something to do with endorphin release. Don't you think?
I would think sure.
Serotonin release, endorphin release makes you happy.
Yeah, it does. Makes me happy. Hey, isn't that a song?
Sunshine.
Don't.
Oh, boy. Okay. We've crossed the line. We're singing.
Now joining us on our phones for iRescue Radio is Sister Mary Margaret. She's a board-certified music therapist, and she's honoring us today by joining us on iRescue Radio to tell us a little more about music therapy and how it affects patients physiologically. Welcome to the show, Sister Mary Margaret.
You're very welcome.
Could you tell us just a little bit about what you know about music therapy and how you've seen it distinctly help people physiologically?
I would say when I worked at the hospital as a music therapist, and some of our therapists still work there, continue to, we know exactly how music can help them in their recuperation or in their rehabilitation as patients in the hospital. We know that it reduces the anxiety that everybody feels when they go through a medical procedures of any kind, and lowers the stress level so that everything else works more thoroughly. The medicine that they take has a better effect on them. They're deeper. They breathe more deeply. We have seen how music relaxes them to the point where they will continue to breathe deeply, which then gets more oxygen into their bloodstream, and of course that's always a good thing. It reduces nausea sometimes because they do not concentrate on how sick they might be feeling because they're distracted with the music, and that then lowers their nauseousness, and everything seems to work better for them after they've had a session with a music therapist.
Isn't that interesting? Now, I one of the questions that I would have is, does it matter what type of music it is, or have you seen that one particular type of music over another has a different effect? In this article that we were reading, it just vaguely said that any music that a person enjoys to listen to has this physiological effect of vasodilation, and helps them through their illness. Maybe you can shed some light on what your experience has shown in that area.
I would certainly corroborate with that observation. However, the one restriction I would say is that we've always found that the music that the patient preferred is the most effective music. And yet many times patients will say, it doesn't matter to me. You play or you bring whatever you want to. And that works too. But if they do have a preference, that's the best. We know that in order for relaxation to happen, the music should not be really, really high beat, fast beat. Usually around 70 beats per minute works the best. And the volume should not be extremely loud. So not all of the music out there would work. And the other thing is pitch range. Music that would be too high would be irritating, and so in the middle of the range, pitch works best. So certain instruments do seem to work better than others, just because of their quality and their tone quality.
That is so interesting. Sister Mary Margaret, music therapist, thank you so much for joining us on iRescue Radio's Rescue Health and Prevention Show. We really appreciate you being a guest here today, and we hope to hear again from you soon in the future.
Thank you very much.
Well, I think that pretty much wraps up what we're going to cover this week on iRescueRadio.com, but make sure you stay tuned. We're going to be coming back to you with a lot more good stuff and more interesting things. You know, things are happening all the time. You have only one body in this life. And, you know, one of the things that we recognized is that, you know, people tend not to want to talk about their health until it goes poorly. And, you know, in this show, we're hoping that you're going to be able to glean a little bit of lightheartedness from not taking ourselves too serious. At the same time, hopefully you'll be able to get some tidbits of information that might help you to live a happy and healthy life and to prevent, which is better than to try to, you know, rescue.
Rescue, which we get to see quite often.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I've always told people the best way to survive cardiac arrest?
Not to have it.
Exactly. So that wraps it up. Thanks again for joining us on iRescue Radio. This is Roy Shaw.
Jody Marvin.
Dan Hendrick.
And thanks again for joining us. Have a great week.
We put on a talk show called iRescue Radio, and a funny question came in through the flu season that is there actually a sewage surge when you have mass outbreaks of flu epidemic?
Or, for instance, norovirus.
Or norovirus, exactly. And so it got us thinking, and I was going to just answer it. I was going to quell that rumor once and for all.
That kind of falls into that whole category of the urban legend about the Super Bowl flush.
Uh-huh.
You know, where people think, oh, man, the sewer systems must really get hammered when everybody gets up to go to the bathroom at halftime.
Oh, I've never heard that before.
Never heard that?
No, that's hilarious.
Well, that would be along the same lines as thinking that, you know, if a particular community has had a horrible outbreak of the flu, that they're constantly bathing or washing their hands. Is that kind of what the implication is?
Yeah, well, like, you know, 420 people at Hope College, right? All
right.
Stuck in their dorm room at the same time, all get norovirus. What does that
mean? And they're all using the bathroom
at
exponentially
similar times. Exactly. Exactly.
Well, it would take a lot more than 400 people.
Okay.
If you have anything you would like to contribute to iRescue Radio, you can contact us toll-free at 866-661-5701 or visit our website at irescueradio.com. The commentaries in this podcast may not reflect the views of iRescue Radio or any of its sponsors or subsidiaries. iRescue Radio will not be held liable for any damages resulting from the advice given in this podcast.